Escuelas Oficiales de Idiomas de la Región de Murcia. Pruebas específicas de certificación. Inglés. Nivel C1. Convocatoria Extraordinaria 2022. Comprensión de textos orales.
Task 1. Listen to a part of the news bulletin about the air pollution in Delhi. Choose the best option, A, B or C, according to the recording. Write the corresponding letters, A, B or C, on the answer sheet, in spaces 1 to 8. The first item is an example. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
Next, around this time of year, smog in Delhi usually becomes a big problem, but this year there might be some measures not previously seen. Officials are ready to impose a complete lockdown to fight worsening air pollution. Schools have already been closed for a week and civil servants have been ordered to work from home. Well, joining me now in Delhi is our correspondent, Ragini Vaidyanathan. Hi, Ragini, good to see you. So this seems, you know, it's funny, this idea of lockdowns, which just a couple of years ago would be absolutely draconian, we are now very used to because of COVID-19 and potentially on its way now for air pollution.
That's right. And many people here in Delhi have also been for a long time used to wearing face masks, not just for COVID, but to protect people from the dangerous, foul, filthy air that is outside. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be indoors at the moment, that there are so many people in this city who have to go outside for their work. Now, the levels of air pollution at the moment are lower than the last few days, but in the last couple of weeks, they were as high as 10 times the recommended limit, according to the World Health Organization. In particular, concern is over levels of what they call PM2.5, and they're the tiny particles that you can breathe in and they can sort of stay lodged in your lungs. They can lead to respiratory illnesses and serious health conditions. And I mean, just telling you personally, Lewis, what it's like, it's one of those things that's a stealth thing here in Delhi. You sometimes feel you've got a really, really bad headache. You can take a sort of metallic metallic sort of taste in your throat, and you do feel lightheaded at times, and it's there everywhere, and that's the concern. But I think the thing that really is one of the questions many people here in Delhi ask is, why isn't anything changing? This isn't the first time I've reported on this for BBC World, and it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because this was a court order effectively a couple of days ago, wasn't it, saying something needs to be done here for the air quality index. Air quality is so bad. But some of the questions, even if a lockdown does come in, what actual difference can it make in the long term?
It's probably worth reminding our viewers, Lewis, what people say is causing this deadly smog in the air. Now, this toxic smog, I should say. Now, there are a few factors that people say are to blame. Now, one of the main factors people say is the farmers in the neighbouring states who burn their crop stubble to clear their fields at the end of the year for a new season. And that can produce huge amounts of smoke. But officials here in Delhi say it's not just that. It's also the traffic fumes, industrial emissions, and people always talk about the fumes from Diwali fireworks in the aftermath from the festival of Diwali and other festivals that happen at this time of year. A lot of people argue and debate over what the causes are, but I think one of the ongoing challenges is what the solutions are. So you've got the Delhi government now saying that children should have online classes for the next week. You've also got civil servants, as you say, Lewis, being told to stay at home, and you've got some construction work that's been suspended for the next few days. But that isn't a long-term lasting solution. And there was a Supreme Court hearing at the weekend discussing this situation. And one official said that living in Delhi and breathing in this air is equivalent to smoking 20 cigarettes a day. And that applies to newborns as well. So that's how stark and serious this is. But the challenge is that we keep having these conversations, and many people here say, what is going to change?
Now listen again.
Next, around this time of year, smog in Delhi usually becomes a big problem. But this year, there might be some measures not previously seen. Officials are ready to impose a complete lockdown to fight worsening air pollution. Schools have already been closed for a week, and civil servants have been ordered to work from home. Well, joining me now in Delhi is our correspondent, Rajini Vaidyanathan. Hi, Rajini. Good to see you. So this seems, you know, it's funny, this idea of lockdowns, which just a couple of years ago would be absolutely draconian, we are now very used to because of COVID-19 and potentially on its way now for air pollution.
That's right. And many people here in Delhi have also been for a long time used to wearing face masks, not just for COVID, but to protect people from the dangerous, foul, filthy air that is outside. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be indoors at the moment, that there are so many people in this city who have to go outside for their work. Now, the levels of air pollution at the moment are lower than the last few days, but in the last couple of weeks, they were as high as 10 times the recommended limit, according to the World Health Organization. In particular, concern is over levels of what they call PM2.5, and they're the tiny particles that you can breathe in, and they can sort of stay lodged in your lungs. They can lead to respiratory illnesses. and serious health conditions. And I mean, just telling you personally, Lewis, what it's like, it's one of those things that's a stealth thing here in Delhi. You sometimes feel you've got a really, really bad headache. You can taste a sort of metallic taste in your throat. And you do feel lightheaded at times. And it's there everywhere. And that's the concern. But I think the thing that really is one of the questions many people here in Delhi ask is, why isn't anything changing? This isn't the first time I've reported on this for BBC World, and it probably won't be the last.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? Because this was a court order, effectively, a couple of days ago, wasn't it, saying something needs to be done here for the air quality index. Air quality is so bad. But some of the questions, even if a lockdown does come in, what actual difference can it make in the long term?
It's probably worth reminding our viewers, Lewis, what people say is causing this deadly smog in the air. Now, this toxic smog, I should say. Now, there are a few factors that people say are to blame. Now, one of the main factors people say is the farmers in the neighbouring states who burn their crop stubble to clear their fields at the end of the year for a new season. And that can produce huge amounts of smoke. But officials here in Delhi say it's not just that. It's also the traffic fumes, industrial emissions, and people always talk about the fumes from Diwali fireworks in the aftermath from the festival of Diwali and other festivals that happen at this time of year. A lot of people argue and debate over what the causes are, but I think one of the ongoing challenges is what the solutions are. So you've got the Delhi government now saying that children should have online classes for the next week. You've also got civil servants, as you say, Lewis, being told to stay at home, and you've got some construction work that's been suspended for the next few days. But that isn't a long-term lasting solution. And there was a Supreme Court hearing at the weekend discussing this situation. And one official said that living in Delhi and breathing in this air is equivalent to smoking 20 cigarettes a day. And that applies to newborns as well. So that's how stark and serious this is. But the challenge is that we keep having these conversations, and many people here say, what is going to change?
Task 2. Listen to 5 reviews of different applications that work on devices of the brand Apple. Match each sentence, 9 to 16, with one of the apps, A, B, C or D, according to the recording. The first review is an example. Write the corresponding letters, A, B, C or D, on the answer sheet, in spaces 9 to 16. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
Example.
Batteries is a menu bar app that shows the battery status of all of your devices. This not only includes the laptop battery, but keyboard, mouse, and trackpad. It also shows Bluetooth headphones like AirPods as well. And on top of all that, it'll show your iPhone and iPad's battery level as well. Honestly, I'm really surprised this isn't built into macOS already.
A. Solver.
Solver is probably the most niche app in this video. It combines both a text editor and a calculator. This allows you to write out a math problem in natural language, and then it solves the problem for you. There's a ton you could do with this that I find really helpful. Honestly, it's been a little while since I took a math class, so more complex problems, I just don't even remember how to solve them. You could do things like find the percentage of a cost of something, find the time between a specific date range, convert measurements, get time zones, and a lot more. There's even advanced features like being able to set variables in the app. So that means you could set like your tax rate as a variable so you don't have to remember what that is constantly. You can just, you know, call the variable tax rate or, you know, specific dates for whatever thing.
B. Text Sniper.
Text Sniper is a really useful app. It's a lot like Apple's new Live Text feature, but you can use it anywhere in macOS. So how this works, by default, you can hit Command-Shift-2 and you get a selector tool. Drag this over any text, doesn't matter if it's selectable or not. And then all of that text will be added to your clipboard. I've been using this to grab chapter markers out of Final Cut so I can just paste them into YouTube. Now, this text in Final Cut isn't selectable at all. Now, I could just take a screenshot and use the live text feature, but using Text Sniper is just cleaner. This will also work with PDF documents that aren't OCR'd, images, web pages, whatever you want to pull text from, Text Sniper can do it.
C. Set App.
Apple products keep getting better and better, and with that, we're able to accomplish our work even faster. But it's time for another dramatic change. This is Setup, and the change that it brings lies in the way we interact with software, bringing even more simplicity and productivity to our everyday lives. Setup helps solve tasks on your Mac, which would normally cost you time searching the internet and installing demo apps for a solution. Let me show you how this works. Let's say I want a clipboard manager. I can just type that into Setup. Setup found a few apps here, but Paste looks exactly like what I want. With one click, we can install the full version of the app. Now I have a clipboard manager on my Mac. No need to install a bunch of different demo applications, insert my credit card number for trials, or even pay upfront for apps that I'm not sure are going to solve my problem. By using multiple apps, I can literally revamp my entire workflow as the apps contribute to a common goal, like productivity, task management, and so much more.
D. Mission Control Plus.
Mission Control Plus is a simple utility, but a really handy one. Once you have Mission Control Plus installed, when you three-finger swipe up to get Mission Control, you will now see an X button on a window that you hover over. You can click that and it'll just close the window. Window management is one of my biggest complaints on macOS, and this just kind of helps me keep things a little more organized. You know, if I don't need something open, I can just quickly close that window and just let that go and then focus on the stuff that I do have open.
Now listen again.
Example.
Batteries is a menu bar app that shows the battery status of all of your devices. This not only includes the laptop battery, but keyboard, mouse, and trackpad. It also shows Bluetooth headphones like AirPods as well. And on top of all that, it'll show your iPhone and iPad's battery level as well. Honestly, I'm really surprised this isn't built into macOS already.
A. Solver.
Solver is probably the most niche app in this video. It combines both a text editor and a calculator. This allows you to write out a math problem in natural language, and then it solves the problem for you. There's a ton you could do with this that I find really helpful. Honestly, it's been a little while since I took a math class, so more complex problems, I just don't even remember how to solve them. You could do things like find the percentage of a cost of something, find the time between a specific date range, convert measurements, get time zones, and a lot more. There's even advanced features like being able to set variables in the app. So that means you could set like your tax rate as a variable so you don't have to remember what that is constantly. You can just, you know, call the variable tax rate or, you know, specific dates for whatever thing.
B. Text Sniper.
Text Sniper is a really useful app. It's a lot like Apple's new Live Text feature, but you can use it anywhere in macOS. So how this works, by default, you can hit Command-Shift-2 and you get a selector tool. Drag this over any text, doesn't matter if it's selectable or not. And then all of that text will be added to your clipboard. I've been using this to grab chapter markers out of Final Cut so I can just paste them into YouTube. Now, this text in Final Cut isn't selectable at all. Now, I could just take a screenshot and use the live text feature, but using Text Sniper is just cleaner. This will also work with PDF documents that aren't OCR'd, images, web pages, whatever you want to pull text from, Text Sniper can do it.
C. Setup.
Apple products keep getting better and better, and with that, we're able to accomplish our work even faster. But it's time for another dramatic change. This is SetApp, and the change that it brings lies in the way we interact with software, bringing even more simplicity and productivity to our everyday lives. SetApp helps solve tasks on your Mac, which would normally cost you time searching the internet and installing demo apps for a solution. Let me show you how this works. Let's say I want a clipboard manager. I can just type that into SetApp. SetApp found a few apps here, but Paste looks exactly like what I want. With one click, we can install the full version of the app. Now I have a clipboard manager on my Mac. No need to install a bunch of different demo applications, insert my credit card number for trials, or even pay upfront for apps that I'm not sure are going to solve my problem. By using multiple apps, I can literally revamp my entire workflow as the apps contribute to a common goal, like productivity, task management, and so much more.
D. Mission Control Plus.
Mission Control Plus is a simple utility, but a really handy one. Once you have Mission Control Plus installed, when you three-finger swipe up to get Mission Control, you will now see an X button on a window that you hover over. You can click that and it'll just close the window. Window management is one of my biggest complaints on macOS, and this just kind of helps me keep things a little more organized. You know, if I don't need something open, I can just quickly close that window and just let that go, and then focus on the stuff that I do have open.
Task 3. Listen to a piece of news about the 40-hour work week. Complete the gaps with one suitable word from the recording. The first item is an example. Write your answers on the answer sheet, in spaces 17 to 26. You will hear the recording twice.
Now you have 2 minutes to read the task before the audio starts.
The pandemic has people and businesses reevaluating how they work and how much they work. Kickstarter, Shopify, Shake Shack, these are all companies exploring a reduced work week, like, say, from 5 days a week to four. But why is 40 hours the norm anyway? Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi from our Planet Money podcast team brings us this quick history of the work week.
Historian Benjamin Honeycutt studies how work and leisure have changed over the centuries.
Is it some sort of like a natural law that we should all work 40 hours a week?
No. Work itself is this brand new invention.
The human history of work can be summed up very roughly, Honeycutt says, in three big chapters. From hunting and gathering through early farming, when humans worked basically just as much as they needed to survive. Anthropologists estimate that was way less than 40 hours. Then skip to the Industrial Revolution. Factories spring up with machines whirring from dawn until dusk, often 6 days a week. 70 or more working hours would have been common, at least in the early 1800s in the U.S. We can call this second chapter peak work. And the response, from workers anyway, was the labor movement. Protests, strikes, lobbying employers and the government for shorter work days, among many other demands.
The first demand of organized labor was 10 hours, the 10-hour movement. And they made a concerted effort and were successful to a certain extent to obtain the 10-hour a day.
By the late 19th century, Honeycutt says, the work week begins to shrink to something closer to 60 hours a week for more and more people. And it keeps shrinking for a while, just in time for the rise of so-called scientific management, when businesses begin studying how to increase worker productivity. And they start to find a downside to even the 10-hour day.
People who are working 10 hours, surprise, surprise, got tired. After 8 hours, the worker is not as productive, especially on, you know, a high-speed assembly line.
In the 1920s, Henry Ford famously adopts an 8-hour workday, though in part that is so he can run his factories 24 hours a day. But it took the Great Depression to make 40 hours the norm. Government saw a shorter work week as a way to fight the massive unemployment crisis by spreading the remaining labor out over more people. That led to a series of laws that eventually enshrined 40 hours as America's work week in 1940. And it seemed like that trend would keep going. The most respected economist of the era, John Maynard Keynes, famously predicted that improving technology and increasing efficiency would deliver a 15-hour work week by 2030.
Now, the man's long since dead. I don't want to make fun of the dead people, but unless something happens in 9 years or so, he was really wrong.
Dan Hammermesh is a labor economist at Barnard College. He says some wealthy countries have shortened their total work hours per year, but mainly through things like government-mandated leave time and more vacation. America hasn't really done that. So this new crop of companies experimenting with shorter weeks is kind of a blip, he says. It's largely in white-collar work, and what makes sense there won't necessarily work for a huge swath of workers in industries like manufacturing, food service, and healthcare. And he says that makes it unlikely to spread organically across the broader economy.
If I and my company do it and you and don't, in your company, I'll feel a disadvantage. So I need somebody external to pull us out of this trap, i.e., a government.
It's going to take big government action, Hammermesh says, for 32 hours to really become the new 40. Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi, NPR News.
Now listen again.
The pandemic has people and businesses reevaluating how they work and how much they work. Kickstarter, Shopify, Shake Shack, these are all companies exploring a reduced work week, like say from 5 days a week to four. But why is 40 hours the norm anyway? Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi from our Planet Money podcast team brings us this quick history of the work week.
Historian Benjamin Honeycutt studies how work and leisure have changed over the centuries. Is it some sort of like a natural law that we should all work 40 hours a week?
No. Work itself is this brand new invention.
The human history of work can be summed up very roughly, Honeycutt says, in three big chapters. From hunting and gathering through early farming, when humans worked basically just as much as they needed to survive. Anthropologists estimate that was way less than 40 hours. Then skip to the Industrial Revolution. Factories spring up with machines whirring from dawn until dusk, often 6 days a week. 70 or more working hours would have been common, at least in the early 1800s in the U.S. We can call this second chapter peak work. And the response, from workers anyway, was the labor movement. Protests, strikes, lobbying employers and the government for shorter work days, among many other demands.
The first demand of organized labor was 10 hours, the 10-hour movement. And they made a concerted effort and were successful to a certain extent to obtain the 10-hour a day.
By the late 19th century, Honeycutt says, the work week begins to shrink to something closer to 60 hours a week for more and more people. And it keeps shrinking for a while, just in time for the rise of so-called scientific management, when businesses begin studying how to increase worker productivity. And they start to find a downside to even the 10-hour day.
People who are working 10 hours, surprise, surprise, got tired. After 8 hours, the worker is not as productive, especially on, you know, a high-speed assembly line.
In the 1920s, Henry Ford famously adopts an 8-hour workday, though in part that is so he can run his factories 24 hours a day. But it took the Great Depression to make 40 hours the norm. Government saw a shorter work week as a way to fight the massive unemployment crisis by spreading the remaining labor out over more people. That led to a series of laws that eventually enshrined 40 hours as America's work week in 1940. And it seemed like that trend would keep going. The most respected economist of the era, John Maynard Keynes, famously predicted that improving technology and increasing efficiency would deliver a 15-hour work week by 2030.
Now, the man's long since dead. I don't want to make fun of the dead people, but unless something happens in 9 years or so, he was really wrong.
Dan Hammermesh is a labor economist at Barnard College. He says some wealthy countries have shortened their total work hours per year, but mainly through things like government-mandated leave time and more vacation. America hasn't really done that. So this new crop of companies experimenting with shorter weeks is kind of a blip, he says. It's largely in white-collar work, and what makes sense there won't necessarily work for a huge swath of workers in industries like manufacturing, food service, and healthcare. And he says that makes it unlikely to spread organically across the broader economy.
If I and my company do it and you and don't, in your company, I'll feel a disadvantage. So I need somebody external to pull us out of this trap, i.e., a government.
It's going to take big government action, Hammermesh says, for 32 hours to really become the new 40. Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi, NPR News.
fin de la prueba.